This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
And at 9:04, it's time now for Sports Saturday, brought to you by Prairie Farms Dairy in Carlinville. Taste the homemade goodness of Prairie Farms. By Bruce Webb Insurance in Farmersville and Raymond. By Security National Bank, with locations to serve you in Witt, Coffeen, Irving, and Fillmore. By Midwest Basement Technologies, call 618-372-7077. By the Huff Funeral Homes in Raymond, Farmersville, and Hillsboro. By Kurt's 24-hour heavy and light-duty towing at Litchfield. And by Hillsboro Area Hospital, your front door to a world of healthcare. Here are the guys. It's Tim Mize, Terry Tote, and Uncle Ralph.
Ed had one there.
It's getting deep, Tim.
Already.
Get the boots out. Whoa. Oh, my gosh. It's getting deep in here.
The reminiscing has begun. Welcome to WSMI Sports Saturday. It's going to be a good show today, Terry.
Yes, we're going to have a lot of fun here, and we're going to reminisce a little bit. And also, we're going to talk about the Bud Reinecke Golf Tournament coming up next weekend at Indian Springs. And that's a change in venue. Earl Myers, get in here. Get in here, buddy, and tell us a little bit about that here right off the bat.
Well, this year we're going to Indian Springs. We're doing this year down there because we think that we'll be able to get all of our golfers on the course at the same time in the morning. We'll be able to finish early in the afternoon, and people can do whatever they want to in the evening.
You know what? If you had a guy like Matt Hughes who's sitting right next to you running the show down there, they would have gotten through that in time.
Well, I believe that. I'd like to see Matt Hughes out there swinging a golf club sometime. Instead of throwing people around, he could knock that little white ball around. He could write their names on it and say, you know, Sean Penn, this one's for you. Bang.
Oh, wow.
He's got a look on his face that makes me believe that maybe golf's not his best friend.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so competitive. If I'm not good at it, I won't do it.
Right.
It's just the way it is. And you're not going to see me. You're not going to have somebody take a bunch of pictures of me goofing up on a golf course.
It's the internet age, and that would be big.
That's right.
It would be trending
that would be
on Twitter.
Yeah, it would be. Anyway, go ahead, Earl.
Anyway, it is a
sorry
it'll be
that.
A four-person scramble, shotgun morning, tee time starting at 8:30 p.m. People that are playing should be out there around 7:30, 7:45, so we can get them to the right tees. Cost is $240 per team, just as it has been in the past.
And, of course, this goes to?
It goes to the Hillsboro Sports Complex, where this year we plan to, if we get enough funds, we want to improve our dugouts at the high school varsity softball field and high school baseball field. Any leftover monies will be used towards the soccer program.
What do you want to do to the dugouts?
Actually, we're going to put some metal tops on them.
Oh, okay.
The canvas tops that we've had in the past, they've deteriorated to the point to where they need to be replaced.
If you haven't been to Indian Springs lately, Earl, the new owners have done a considerable amount of work down there, and it's really nice, nice golf course.
They've done a nice job.
Yeah, they have, and we had our Crime Stoppers golf tournament down there a couple weeks ago, and everybody was happy and thrilled with the shape the course was in and how everything was run.
Now, Earl, you're not sold out, are you?
No, we're not.
We still have choice seats available?
We have choice seats available, and we have prime times available.
Okay.
Plus, we've got Hurdle and Kleiner doing their typical Uncle Ralph's butterfly pork chop. And that comes with the price of the golf tournament. And by the way, Roy Hurdle's not with us this morning. Roy's in Russia. Can you believe it?
I heard he was on the road again.
Yeah, he's on the road again.
I don't know how
he's covert mission of some sort, no doubt.
If you want to have some fun, call him.
That's like Dennis Rodman going to North Korea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hurdle in Russia.
Wow.
That's scary.
Hurdle
in
Russia.
I hope he's got a meeting with Vladimir.
Well, I know that he got a call yesterday morning.
Tell him to stay home?
No, he got a call about something, and he said, hey, talk fast. This is costing me $5 a minute.
Guilty as charged.
That was the newsman, Tobinot. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, I think Tobin called him to woke him up. Actually, it was night in Russia, so I'm sure he's having a great vacation over there.
But he will be back.
He will. Well,
I don't know. Do you think they're going to let him out?
To be determined, I guess. It could just be Kleinert on the grill, is what we're saying.
It could just be Kleinert, and that in itself is something to watch.
Yeah, that's you've heard of a burnt offering. Well, I say no more.
Hey, he fixes my butterfly pork chop. I'm not going to insult him.
Earl, you mentioned about the work on the dugouts that you'd like to do. Over the years, what has the money raised from this golf tournament gone to?
We've built Diamond 5, which is called the Bud Reinecke Diamond. We've added batting cages. We have two batting cages out there. The boys' batting cage was paid for entirely through the Reinecke tournament. The girls' batting cage partially. We've done tons of work with the ball diamond. Dirt is expensive. You know, you think dirt would be free, but it is not free.
And you never have enough of it.
We never have enough of it, and we figure, I was talking with Matt Lentz earlier this week, and his estimate was about $6,000 worth of dirt is needed to upgrade the diamonds at the end of the season.
And this just can't be dirt.
It's clay. No, it's got to be special dirt.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it is costly. You know, this, the old expression, dirt cheap, doesn't apply to this.
And we're fortunate, of course, to have a number of sponsors for the golf tournament. We have a number of individuals who make a donation. Those donations are used strictly for the profits that go back into the sports complex.
And you do have hole sponsors?
Yes, we do. Right now we've got 28 hole sponsors. And I can't rattle them off because I don't have the list.
No, but that's good. That's money you know you have.
We are short of teams, though, at this time. But our experience in the past has been that during the week before the tournament, most people decide they'll be available on Saturday and they send in their fees.
And you mentioned that the pork chop is included in the team fee. And also, you guys always have nice door prizes and
those other types
of drawings.
We'll have the mega raffle again this year and a number of other door prizes. I know on the mega raffle, one of the items is a Casey's gift card for gasoline and also 10 dozen golf balls that you can lose.
That could almost last the round.
Springs.
How long would it take you?
That's right.
How long would it take you to lose those, Earl?
Well, thanks, Ralph. It wouldn't take me long down at Indian Springs because I'm not going to go in the woods and look for those things.
Yeah.
There's too many critters in the woods down there. So.
And that thing called poison ivy.
That's right.
Let's talk a little bit about Bud Reinecke and why the tournament was named in his honor.
Well, actually, Bud was an avid sportsman. He, having a number of boys in the family, if there was a baseball game going on in Hillsboro, you saw Bud Reinecke there. And the first experience I had with Bud was down at the old Central Park Ball Diamonds when Bud came down one night and they said, you know, you guys need a water fountain down here. He said, I'm going to make you a donation for a water fountain. So that's kind of the relationship that started with the Reinecke family. Bud was very generous in trying to improve the facilities because he was there and he saw the need.
And not only did Bud have a bunch of sons that got him interested in sports, they were good athletes.
Yes, they were.
Very good athletes.
And they haven't changed either.
No.
They may not be playing basketball. They may not be playing football, but they can certainly knock that golf ball a mile.
And they're a little competitive when playing golf as well.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
It's a family thing, you know.
You see J.R. Reinecke out at the country club every Wednesday night with Jim Eichhoff. I happen to be on his team, so. and they're in first place.
Hey,
I have to
go.
Mention that.
When you mention the word competitive, you just named two names right there. That's competitive,
yes.
Very competitive, and very good golfers.
Mm-hmm. Earl, how can somebody sign up? What's the quickest way to do it?
Okay, quickest way to do it would not be to call Roy Hurdle in Russia. But you can call Chris Huber in Hillsboro. Her number's in a phone book. I'll give it to you, though. It's 2069. Give me a call at 532-2326. And you can call Rich and Amy Reinecke at 537-3159.
Calling Hurdle, it might not be the fastest, but it might be the funnest.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
At $5 a minute.
Yes.
Get hold of Hurdle and say, hey, Hurdle, hold on a second. I got another call coming in.
Just hold on one second.
Yeah. I am so in trouble by this when he gets back.
And when is Hurdle coming back?
I think he's coming back Wednesday or Thursday.
So he'll be over his jet lag.
He'll be over jet lag. So he'll be able to cook.
Oh, is that what we call it, jet lag? Well, huh?
If it was me, I'd give his phone number out.
Yeah.
The voicemail box you were trying to reach is full.
That's right.
You can reach Hurdle at Vladimir Putin's residence.
Well, you know, I probably ought to give out his phone number, but, you know, I'd probably pay for it for a long time.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Payback can be heck.
Several years you would be indebted.
Yeah, he's got a long memory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does he now?
Nancy said send him to the store for a loaf of bread and a quart of milk, and he'll forget one of them. But for this kind of stuff, his memory's better.
Oh, yes.
We need to get to a break here on WSMI Sports Saturday. When we come back, we're going to talk to UFC Hall of Famer Matt Hughes. We will do that following these messages.
Tired of always having to clean up the basement or crawl space after a rain? You need to call Midwest Basement Tech for a permanent solution. If it's leaking, cracking, buckling, or sinking, Midwest Basement Tech is the company to call. 1-800-848-9805. Serving Central Illinois for over 30 years with local service techs and free estimates. Call now, 1-800-848-9805. Or on the web at MidwestBasementTech.com for money-saving coupons and your chance of receiving free tickets to watch your St. Louis Cardinals play at home this season.
Farming doesn't follow an 8-to-5 schedule. A slow week is 60 to 80 hours. My land, livestock, and family rely on me. That's why I bought farm insurance from Auto Owners Insurance, because every policy comes with a local agent, a real person who lives right in my community, who I can rely on to keep my farm covered no matter what.
See the Bruce Webb Insurance Agency in Farmersville or Raymond.
And at 9:16, let's take a look at the weather forecast brought to you by Paris Frozen Foods in Hillsboro. It's the home of the Big Porky. Partly cloudy skies for the day. There is a slight chance for a scattered shower. Expect a high of around 95 degrees. Partly cloudy skies continuing on for tonight. We'll have a low of around 70 degrees. And then for tomorrow, sunny skies. We'll have a high Sunday of around 90. At 9:16, we have a temperature reading of 81 degrees. And the weather forecast is brought to you by Paris Frozen Foods in Hillsboro. It's the home of the Big Porky. Sports Saturday continues in just a minute.
I'll never forget that moment.
Never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
It started with a phone call.
I got the text when I was at work.
My first call up ever as a member of the National Guard. This was it, the real deal.
When we got to the armory, they briefed us on the wildfires, how they were getting dangerously close to homes.
It was amazing to be a part of this massive operation. Helicopters were going up with huge buckets to drop water on the fires.
Some of the guys in the unit were preparing for firefighting with local fire crews.
We went out in Humvees to help with the evacuations.
At that moment, I got my first taste of just how important the Guard is to my community.
See how the Guard can be an important part of your life at NationalGuard.com. Discover what it means to be a citizen soldier, to serve locally as well as globally. Look into the benefits, including career skills and money for college. Take a moment. Go to NationalGuard.com today.
Sponsored by the Illinois National Guard. Aired by the Illinois Broadcasters Association and this station.
And at 9:17, Sports Saturday continues. Once again, here's Tim Mize, Uncle Ralph, and Terry Tote.
Tobin Ott, thank you very much, and welcome back to WSMI Sports Saturday. And guys, we are honored to have Matt Hughes in our WSMI studios this morning. And we sit here every Saturday morning. We talk primarily about high school sports, and we always try to drive home the point that with high school sports, it's about fun, having a good time, because the odds of becoming a professional athlete are extremely slim. Maybe you can get a college scholarship out of it, but here with us today sits a man who went to college for wrestling and wound up becoming one of the most recognizable faces in the MMA world. And Matt Hughes, thank you so much for joining us. And I guess now that you're retired, as you look back on it, can you believe you wound up from where you started?
Not at all. I should be swinging a hammer at the end of a shovel, driving a tractor. So that's really who I am. I got to disagree with you a little bit. I think these kids nowadays, they can go to the next level from high school to college if they put their mind and body into it. You know, I've always been a big believer in sports are 50% mental and 50% physical. So if they can put their mind on track, get their body right, and have a good work ethic, that they can definitely go to the next level. You know, it's those three things that are going to propel them. That's what propelled me. Growing up with a twin brother and the hard work on the farm has really made me who I am.
Now, Matt, did you, it's been a few years since you've been in high school. Was wrestling the only thing you did in high school?
Wrestled and played football.
Football. Okay. I thought you played for football because Dave Ball was coaching.
Yes. Yeah, he was. He coached both.
Yeah.
Both football both and wrestling.
So, and obviously, wrestling was your thing. The commitment that you talk of for high school kids today. What's it, you know, what are you talking about specifically when you're talking about committing 50% physical, 50% mental? What are you talking about? How do these kids zero in on that?
The mental side is very tough. You know, I've been through watching the coaching and helping coach as much as I can. I coached the Ultimate Fighter twice. I've coached several guys up in Iowa and my own gym here. But it's just very tough to get the mental side ahead. Physical is easy. Hey, go out, lift your weights, get your cardio in, get your body in tune. The mental side is a lot tougher. And, when I was competing, I'd go to bed every night thinking about my opponent, thinking about my moves, my defense to him. You know, every move there's a counter, and every counter there's a counter. I was going through the whole sequence of what he was going to do to me and how I was going to react and counter him back. So that was my big mental warfare, was the match going through my mind. A month out, that was going through my mind every night. So it's just it's tough to do the mental side of things. You know what? I think kids have changed. I've been out 20 years. I've been out 21 years from high school. And the kids, I just don't see the big work ethic like I used to see back when I was walking through. And I try to take myself out and just say, well, I did more and more and more. I think everybody back then, 20 years ago, was just doing more. And I think the parents are a little bit different nowadays, too. I think the parents are a little bit too involved in the sports. I think there's a huge dropout rate between kids that are in sixth grade and kids that go in high school. So I don't push my kids. If my kids want to go out for something, they go out. But I don't push my kids at all.
Well, you should play because you or participate because you enjoy it, not because mom and dad want you to do it.
Correct.
When you're involved in the latter, you're going to burn out.
Yeah.
And you're just going to walk through it and just put your time in and maybe get a car out of it when you turn 16 just because you're on the basketball team or football team or whatever, but really not have your heart in it.
One of the great things, Matt, that I see in what you've accomplished and what you have done that is very admirable to me is when you left here to become an Ultimate Fighter and you're back here today, and the big thing that sticks in my mind as I visit with you and see you is you're still the same gentleman. You never forgot where you came from and how you got where you was, and that's great.
Well, I think one of the things that made me somewhat successful is I had all the support from my hometown. I had a huge amount of support. I can remember going out there fighting Carlos Newton the first time, winning the belt, and after I won the belt, turn around looking up in the up from the octagon, and there was a crowd of Hillsborough people there. So I've always had the support here, and I love this place. You know, I've had opportunities to fly to move to Vegas, and I Vegas isn't the type of place for me. Me and my wife were raised in this town, and I want my kids raised in this town. You know, it's a great community to raise a kid in, so that's the way it's going to be. But I think it all comes down to all the support I've got from this town, and I've always wanted to give back, you know, in any way I can to this community.
Matt, one thing about your choices that you've made, you could have opted to make huge amounts of money and be hugely famous. Not that you're already famous in many respects, but I mean, you could have made more of an impact on this sport if you wanted to, but there were other priorities other than money.
I could have moved somewhere, and if I would have moved to Vegas, you know, I would have been at the UFC home and done a little bit more, but there was no option for me. That decision wasn't even close to coming. I didn't want to move away. I love the Midwest. And I love my hometown, so I wasn't going anywhere. Now, I used to drive up to Iowa when I was training at Pat Miletich's gym. I'd drive 3.5 hours up there. I'd usually stay Monday through Friday. I'd come home on the weekends, especially when I started dating my wife nowadays. So that's just the routine I had, the routine I loved, and did not bother me driving up there and driving back.
You mentioned a while ago something that is very dear to you and very dear to me, and we have a young man here who is also involved in it. But you talked about the hard work and the things you've done on the farm, and to me, as a youngster growing up a long time ago, and as you growing up, our Tim over here, there's just nothing better than that farm background.
I think it's the farm work, whether it be bucking bales or lifting the tongue of a wagon so your dad can hook onto it or whatever it is, you're just active every day. Every day you're active. And it gives you that core strength where that's what gets you through the day. Whether you're a wife and you're taking laundry out of the washing machine, putting it in the dryer, that you're using all core muscles to do that. So I think that's where you get all your real core strength. I'm a big core guy. You know, from your shoulders down to your knees is really what's considered your core. And that's what helps everyday living.
And plus the challenge of it every day. When you get up, there's a challenge there waiting for you.
And a lot of times it was kind of something different. So growing up with a twin brother on a farm was great for me. You know, if I wasn't challenged with the work, it was my brother. My dad figured out real quick, and it took us a little while for Mark and I to see the writing on the wall. But he would challenge us, well, I bet you guys can't go move those 20 bales in, you know, 10 minutes. You know, and he did that really our whole life, and we never caught on until we got older. But, you know, to this day, if my wife wants me to do something, she'll tell me I can't do it.
Yeah.
Man, the fact that you're from such a rural area, it made such an interesting story in the UFC, because it seems like so many people who are in MMA at that level aren't necessarily from the country. You know, they have more of a city type of background. Did you ever feel like you were representing, like, rural America, so to speak, when you would get in the octagon against these, you know, prove like, it's always in basketball high school, the city always beats the country, so to speak. Was there ever any of that element when you were fighting?
You know, I really didn't think about it. When I first won the title for the UFC, my walkout song was American Badass by, I forgot who sings it. And then they said, hey, what do you want your walkout song to be? And I said, well, Country Boy Can't Survive would be great. Dana listened to it and he goes, it's just too slow. I just can't do it. Why don't you pick American Badass? And I said, well, that's whatever you want. If I can't have what I want, just put whatever you want on there. Well, then years later, he goes, you know what? We're going to do it. And I started walking out to A Country Boy Can't Survive. And after that came on, I really started to think, there is a little bit of a Country Boy, City Boy clash here.
Plus the perception on the national level changed as well.
I think
the Country Boy, they're going, hey, what a great story. And not only was it a great story from the get-go, but now there's a little bit more emphasis because this guy is the real deal here.
Yeah, but the song may be slow, but when you're walking in, so it's like, golly, it's taking him forever to get there. Like, it almost like built up like the intimidation factor. It's like, he's coming, slowly but surely, he's coming.
Everybody loved that song. And I want to listen to it. Sometimes it comes on the radio, it gets turned real quick.
Yeah.
But that song fit me well. And now you go to the UFC or you watch it, listen to it, there's a lot of slow songs out there. A lot of Johnny Cash, a lot of these guys are coming to these older country songs.
Well, anytime I play that song, I don't introduce it as Hank Williams Jr. Country Boy Can't Survive. I just simply introduce it as the Matt Hughes song. That, you know, that's what it is to me.
Around here, that's what it is.
That's what it is.
And Hank got a hold of the UFC and said, hey, you're selling me tickets. You're selling me records. Go ahead and keep playing
it up. Yeah.
So, I mean, and it really revitalized that song a little bit.
And if you listen to the lyrics of that song, in your case, what could be more fitting than where you were and where you ended up? A country boy can survive. That says it all.
Yeah.
You were a country boy, and you did survive.
The lyrics were pretty good for me.
Yeah.
Matt, as you've been, how many months have you been retired? That was earlier this year.
Mid-January, I retired.
Mid-January. As you look back on your career now, several months removed, is there one specific moment, one title defense that stands above the rest maybe? What do you consider your greatest achievement, I guess?
I'd probably say there were three of them. Number one would be when I won the belt. That was just big. If I hadn't, before that fight, I'd said, if I win it, I'm going to continue. If I lose it, I'm coming back to the farm. I'm giving this fighting up. So that was a big fight for me, because if I wouldn't have won that fight, I wouldn't have won any titles whatsoever. So that was huge. The next would have been Hoist Gracie, just because it was the old and the new. Mm-hmm. After I beat him, I didn't think it was a huge fight, but a lot of other people do, and you know, it was huge for Dana White. He was big on that fight.
I remember watching that fight, and I remember leading up to it. There wasn't a lot of people that were giving you much of a chance.
Now, being the underdog was a lot simpler for me. I would much rather be the underdog than be the guy coming in supposed to win. But Mark and I were just talking about that. Mark was in the stands, you know, Mark's at most all my fights, and he was like, when you got a hold of him, it was like a man and a boy. Because he couldn't believe how. So I think Hoist had a bad night, and I think I remember that fight. When I was backstage, I was so ready. I don't care who was out in that octagon, I was probably going to beat him. Yeah. I was just in tune for that fight. And the third fight was my rematch against BJ Penn. When I beat him, that was just a big fight for me.
Was that just a grudge match?
Number two was, yes. We really didn't like each other. I didn't like the guy who took my belt from me, for sure. And, you know, we're just a lot different. He is that city boy, even though he's from Hawaii. He's that city boy, and I'm that country boy. Now we get along very well. But at the time, no, we really didn't like each other.
And I remember there was one fight. I don't remember which one it was, but your brother, he surprised you, did he not? Like, after the fight was over, he wasn't going to be there?
It was before the fight.
Before the fight, okay.
Boy, I don't know. That might have been Hoist.
Could have been.
That might have been Hoist.
Could have been.
And he's picking me up here in a half an hour, and it'll be one of the questions. Hey, Mark, if you're listening, remind me to ask. And I remember I was in the locker room, and Pat Miletich come in and started smiling at me. Well, when he started smiling at me,
Something suspicious,
what's
right?
going on? And then Mark walked in, and I lost it. You know, I just didn't think he was coming. So it was a good surprise.
In all of your professional fights and stuff, and I'm sure every athlete, everybody competes in sports, has that time when you're preparing for this match or it's 30 minutes for the match and you say, boy, I just haven't got it tonight. I just don't feel like this is going to be good for me.
When in the locker room, I always bring a bunch of guys back in the locker room, and I always want to jack around, joke, have a good time. But as soon as they take me for my fight, that's when things get serious for me. So after they take me, I usually brought Jeremy Horn, who's one of the greatest fighters ever, and cornermen too, next to me. And he'll talk to me the whole time I'm getting my hands taped. And he's telling me my strengths, his weaknesses, stuff like that. After that, it gets very serious. I hit pads. I get warmed up. And then we walk out to the octagon. And if I don't feel right before I walk in the octagon, I'll turn around. And if my brother's a corner, I'll have him. He'll slap me in the face twice on both on each side. And just to wake me up. If I don't feel right, I want something to change. And that's usually it was Mark that I had slap me. You wouldn't have seen that on film because it was outside the octagon. But if I didn't feel like something's right, I want to woke up.
Matt Hughes joining us on Sports Saturday here on WSMI FM 106. Go ahead, Tim.
And one of the interesting things to me about you, Matt, is from my perception, you're not a violent person. You know, you got involved in a violent sport, but sitting here talking to you, I've seen you on other occasions, you're just a nice guy, and I can see the look on your face sometimes when people talk about, you know, just your sheer strength and how you can basically just beat anyone on the face of the earth down. It almost makes you uncomfortable, it seems to me, when people talk about your accomplishments and just your brute strength.
Well, a lot has changed since I started this sport. I've watched two girls get pulled out of my wife's stomach. I became a Christian. I got married. So things have really toned down for me. But I tell you what, when I started this sport, I'd just soon rip your arm off and beat you with it. That's just the way my mentality going in there. But as you get older, more mature, things change in your life. People would always say, how can you be a Christian and be a fighter? And I'd say, well, read the Old Testament. Tell me how violent God is.
Right.
And then I'd say, I'm a big believer on intent. If I accidentally walk into a woman's bathroom and see a woman standing there, that's a lot different than me going into a woman's bathroom looking to see a woman. Mm-hmm. Said my intent is to go in there and get my hand raised. The byproduct is somebody can get hurt. Those are my two examples. But I don't anymore. I didn't go in there to hurt somebody.
Right.
I went in there to win.
Was it a tricky thing like when you were fighting to? I mean, you always hear in sports about it, you can't just flip a switch and turn it on. But when you're a fighter, you kind of do just have to flip a switch.
Yeah. When I walk in that octagon, I really, I really feel like home. And then I always go back, and I go in front of my guys, and they've got usually a banner behind me, and I'm sitting there thinking, that guy actually thinks he's going to go in my house and beat me. And it really, it gets me angered, you know. It does. So
now, and then once you're into the octagon, and the crowd, and do you block all that out? Do you use that as a motivation?
When I got in the octagon, I would I'd be across from my opponent, and Bruce Buffer would be sitting there talking. He's another story, but he gets way too into his job. But I'd always turn around and find my wife. We'd make eye contact, and then I'd be looking at my opponent. And then when the fight starts, the first punch, whether it's his or mine, I'm on autopilot. I don't think about a thing. But I always heard the cheers. I heard the boos. I could hear my corner. I could hear my opponent's corner. And I think that's one of the things that make me successful is I could hear all that. I could always hear my corner. My last two wins, I won those fights because of what my corner said in the middle of a fight.
Hmm.
And I could always hear my opponent's corner. So if they're saying, hey, throw a knee, I knew that I could watch out for a knee coming or an elbow or whatever they were telling the opponent to do.
And that, to me, has always been one of the interesting things about The Ultimate Fighter. Like, when you're in the season, you can always hear the corner because there's no stands during or no crowd during the fights. But you could actually hear all that in a packed arena.
And took it in. And there's guys that I would corner, and I would say, hey, I told you to get the underhook. And they'd say, man, I don't hear a thing in there. and those are the guys that don't, you know, the your corner has a different view than you do. So you really got to use that corner to your advantage. People who don't use their corner, don't hear their corner, they're all tunnel vision, are at a disadvantage.
I'm just curious, what is the feeling when you've got another professional fighter laid over your shoulder ready to slam him? I mean, there were periods in your career you were literally picking people up. You know, take a couple strolls around the octagon, take a look, and then just bam.
It was all – I was trying to damage my opponent. So I was all trying to – I'd love to get the, you know, hit those floater ribs when I was slamming him down. But I was all about damage. In a perfect world, every fight would get ended early. But you always got to soak it up for the judges. So I always tried to do things at the end of every round. I had what's called a flurry. My cornerman knew to tell me when there was 45 seconds to 30 seconds left, I wanted to flurry on my opponent. And if my opponent had done well, I could steal that round from him in the last 30 seconds because that's what the judges see before they go to the scorecard. So I always had a flurry. I was always very mentally tough on my opponents. The first round, I always gave my opponents a very tough first round. I wanted them to go back to their corner, have a minute break, sit and look at me. I'm going to be in a good mood and think, man, I got four more of those. And you know what? If I can break them mentally, they'll crumble physically soon afterwards.
And how hard is it, you mentioned, because you were the champion, so you were always fighting five rounds as the max. What was the challenge of the conditioning from rounds one, two, and three to four and five?
They call those the championship rounds, and I agree with that concept. It's a lot different. You know, I trained for five rounds for such a long time. When I didn't have the belt, I still trained for five rounds because that's all I knew how to do. I was always a big believer in out-train your opponent. And that's something you do a month before the fight. So why not do that as much as you can? Didn't bother me to work hard. Those were my good times in the gym twice a day with my buddies. So why not work hard, win your fight in the training room, and then when you compete out in front of everybody else, it'll be easy.
Matt, and when you were in the training room with your buddies, were these guys, you know, close enough to you, friends enough, you know, colleagues of yours to get in your face sometimes and say, hey, what the heck were you doing?
If I'm not doing something right, definitely, and that's the way I wanted it. When I went to a training camp, after I won the belt, I'd have my own training camps and I'd bring people in, this and that. I always had somebody else run my training camps. The athlete cannot run his own training camp because human nature tells me I'm going to take the easy way out. So I always put somebody else in charge that is going to push me to my limit. And that all my guys knew, whether it was my grappling coach, my boxing coach, my cardio trainer, everybody knew that they could tell me to do whatever needed to be done, and I was going to listen to them. I didn't have a problem listening to somebody. Shoot, it's easy taking direction from somebody. That's the way I always looked at it.
But I don't think that's necessarily the mentality that a lot of people have, and maybe that was, I'm sure it was one of the biggest differences between you having the success that you had and maybe other folks who haven't had that success.
It very well could be, but I was always a big believer in, you know, 4 months ahead of a fight, I would find out in the UFC, I would find out maybe 3 months out. So if I had an inkling that, hey, I got a fight coming up, I would start getting in shape before I even knew about a fight. And as soon as I found out about a fight, 2 to 3 months out, I was training hard.
And you had videotape on every opponent?
Yep. If I want a videotape, call UFC and say, hey, I need the last six fights of Joe Blow, and they'd send me a DVD.
Yeah.
Even though sometimes, Matt, when you had a match, you felt fairly comfortable that this was an opponent that you could handle. But still, I would imagine it's fairly difficult to keep the respect up for that individual, even though you know you're probably going to win this fight. You still have to respect that guy when you get in that ring with him.
There's been several guys that, George St. Pierre is one that I beat him the first time, and then I watched him compete with guys, with tough guys afterwards, and just destroy them. So I knew him and I's time was going to come again, and I knew he was going to be a tough fight. So the going into the second fight with George, after I'd beat him the first time, I knew that was going to be tough. And then going into the third fight, after we'd split wins with each other, I knew that was going to be a tough fight. So yeah, but yes, there's guys where I knew I was going to beat him, but I still respected him. Hey, submission artist, I knew I could maybe outstrike him. I fought Hoyce Gracie, Henzo Gracie, and I knew I was going to probably keep him standing to beat him there. The wrestlers have the big advantage. I get to pick where the battle's going to be fought at. If I'm fighting a good grappler, I can keep him standing, outstrike him. If I'm fighting a Muhammad Ali, I can take him down and beat him on the ground. So with Henzo, I knew I was going to keep Henzo standing and try and outstrike him there and not play that ground game with him where he's very dangerous.
Do you regret, or is there a part that you wish you would have had a fight close to home?
Was always wanting to come into St. Louis. You know, the people who didn't want to fly, or I even had some guy, John Sinati, take a bus to Vegas. you know, I was always fighting so far away, and I did have one in Columbus, Ohio, but that's still, I don't know, 6-7 hours away, whatever it is. So I was wanting to come to St. Louis. Two kind of regrets. I was wanting to fight a UFC in St. Louis, and I also wanted to go to New York City and fight in Madison Square Garden. I thought that would have been cool to kind of end my career in Madison Square Garden, where so much history's at.
How does that work in the UFC? Like, I mean, obviously you were as big a star as they had. I mean, you're laid one of the big foundation blocks. Was it not as simple as just going to Dana White and saying, hey, I want to fight here?
I wasn't that guy.
Yeah.
I just, whatever they wanted, they would call me. They didn't, excuse me, they didn't really pick places. They did. To extent, they wanted to fight me in the Midwest if they could, because I'm a Midwest guy. Canada would be George St. Pierre, you know. So they put guys regionally where they thought they would do the best. But really, they looked at timeline. If I was due for a fight, you know, my contract, 3 fights a year. So if I was due for a fight, they needed to get a fight in for me. They were going to fit me in kind of wherever it was. I was always very happy to go to Vegas. You know, you don't have to twist somebody's arm from Hillsborough too hard to go to Vegas. So, I mean, that was always a good place for me. Always felt like home in Vegas. But they really looked at timeline, you know, and the calendar instead of the venue.
So is that the standard UFC contract then for a fighter, 3 fights a year?
Everybody's different. But, yeah, that I think it's pretty standard, 3 fights a year. They've got so many fighters nowadays, I think it's around 350, that they got a lot of shows going on.
We are talking with Matt Hughes here on WSMI Sports Saturday. We need another break here. We're back with more after this.
June is National Dairy Month, a perfect time to celebrate the homemade goodness of farmer-owned Prairie Farms, even if you're constantly on the go. Enjoy the benefits of Prairie Farms plastic pints, available from your grocer and at area convenience stores. And plastic pints of orange juice, 2% chocolate, or non-fat milk are great when you're on the run. National Dairy Month and plastic pints make it easier for you to taste the homemade goodness of farmer-owned Prairie Farms.
Are you tired all the time or awake frequently at night? Does your bed partner say you snore? 1 in 15 Americans suffer from sleep apnea. You might be a candidate for a sleep study. Don't want to stay the night in the hospital? We have just the thing for you. A sleep study in the comfort of your own home. To see if you qualify, call me, Amanda Payne, respiratory therapist, at 217-532-4175. Hillsboro Area Hospital, your front door to a world of healthcare.
And at 9:44, let's take a look at the weather forecast. It's brought to you by CarQuest in Carlinville and Jacksonville. You'll find it at CarQuest. Partly cloudy skies for today. There is a slight chance for some rain today. Expect a high of around 95 degrees. Partly cloudy skies continuing on for tonight. We'll have a low of around 70 degrees. For Sunday, sunny skies. We'll have a high of around 90. Extended look at the forecast Monday through Wednesday. Partly cloudy skies. Expect highs in the 90s. The lows will be in the low 70s. At 9:44, we have a temperature reading of 83 degrees. And the weather forecast is brought to you by CarQuest in Carlinville and Jacksonville. You'll find it at CarQuest. Sports Saturday continues in just a moment.
Since 1899, four generations of Huffs have been dedicated to serving families in Central Illinois. Today, they continue that tradition of compassion, personal attention, and professional service that started long ago. The Huff family has always tried to place the needs of their families first, to provide them the information to make wise decisions at such a delicate time in their life. Today, Dan and David Huff continue this family tradition. Huff Funeral Homes in Raymond, Farmersville, and Hillsboro, you do have a choice.
Are you spring cleaning? Ever wonder how to tackle the stacks of statements and bills? Sign up for Security National Bank's online and e-statements and view them in your internet banking or download them from our secure site. You can then tackle that stack of bills by using our bill pay, which is free when you sign up for e-statements. Call your local branch to find out more information or sign up today. Security National Bank, big enough to serve you, small enough to know you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
And at 9:45, Sports Saturday continues. Once again, here's Tim Mize, Terry Tote, and Uncle Ralph.
Topinot, thank you very much. We are back here on Sports Saturday. Earl Meyer in our studios. Also, Matt Hughes has joined us on this Saturday morning. I guess kind of a perfect day for Matt to be in our studios because last night at the Montgomery County Fair, it was the, what was it, the Butler Brawl is what they called it. And have we decided, is it, Matt, maybe you know, is this the only county fair in the state that has MMA fights? It's not.
It's not. I don't know about the country. I got flown out to Maine a couple years back, and they had some a county fair. Okay. So
there might be the only one in Illinois.
It could be the only one in Illinois. Yeah. But it is going on in the country.
But it's a very MMA. I mean, has really exploded in the last number of years. You see them now on television, on network television. So that's certainly a big thing. And I guess Matt, for you, that has to be pretty satisfying because you were one of the guys, like I said, one of the core people who has allowed the UFC to elevate to where it's at now. So as you sit back, you retire, I know you don't sit down and just watch fights. That's not what you're doing. You got other things to do. But you have to have a sense of pride with where the organization is now.
Yes and no. I was at the right place at the right time. That's how I got, you know, in with the UFC so good. Just by chance.
Spike TV owes you so much. I'm telling you, man.
I don't know. I just
they do. They do. You made that network.
Well, it wasn't me. It was the UFC.
No. You were a draw, man. I'm telling you.
But so I don't know. You know, I do think back that it's changed a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of a dinosaur now. You know, I'm 39 years old and I'm a dinosaur. But I always say, why'd you retire? Well, I always say I'm just too old, but actually those guys are just too young. You know, I feel good. I still work out. But I just can't, you know, I'm 39 years old, and I can't compete against them 28
And when you look at other professions, as far as athletics is concerned, you're right. 39 is old.
Yeah.
No matter what other sport you're playing.
But went to the fights last night. Adam put on a heck of a production. You know, he did some out-of-the-pocket things, brought in a DJ, so they had some good music, a good sound system. Good fights, maybe, you know, one or two fights that were really kind of long and not the greatest. But other than that, some good knockouts, some submissions. So I think it was really actually great weather. The weather was absolutely perfect. And it was I think it was a pretty good night.
Yeah. What's it like for you to sit there and watch someone else in the octagon knowing that, hey, I don't have to do that again?
It's a little different. Now, when my buddies are competing, like Robbie Lawler will fight in Washington in July, and I'll go out, and since I'm employed by the UFC now, I can't corner him, but I'll go out and I'll be front row, and it'll be tough for me. Just my buddy, who's like a brother to me, is on the other side of that fence, and I don't get to help him out, and I got to sit here and watch him. And it's just tough. I'm going to be – the people next to me are going to be hating me because I'm going to be all over sliding all over the place.
And your job with the UFC is exactly what?
VP of Athletic Development and Government Relations. So the athletic development, it could be anything from life before the UFC for a fighter, life after the UFC, financial awareness while they're at the UFC. So I'm trying to help the fighters in any way that I can. And the government relations part is, you know, they flew me out to New York to try and get the sport legalized in New York. New York's now the last state to be, it actually is illegal, which makes no sense because they allow amateur fighting in New York without any regulation, but they won't let an organized sport come in and be regulated, and that the New York could actually make some money off of it.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
I guess
I just have enough money out in New York.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That must be it.
What do we always say, M-O-N-E-Y?
There you go, Uncle Ralph.
I guess, Matt, looking back at your career and in my own perspective, remembering when you and your brother were fighting in Springfield. You know, you guys were up there when you were just starting.
Yeah,
and some of the bouts we used to go up there and watch you guys, and a lot of good memories.
I've been asked several times, I think somebody actually here when I walked in asked me this. I was doing an interview one time, and the person asked, what are you going to take out of this the most, this sport? What are you going to take the most out of it the most? And I thought, you know, that's a good question. Let me answer it at the end. So they asked five or six more questions, and then he said, hey, what are you going to take away from this sport? You know, and I said, when I first thought about it, I thought the world title come to mind, and I thought, you know, financially I've been pretty lucky, but I thought, you know what I'm going to take most out of this sport is my good times with my buddies. Before I won that belt, we traveled around like a pack. We all cornered each other, you know, and we just had such a good time. What I miss the most of the sport now is the fact that I don't walk in a gym twice a day, joke around with my buddies, get my exercises in. That's what I'm going to miss the most. And that's what kind of kills me today is I don't go up to Iowa and train with my buddies. I don't fly out to Salt Lake City anymore and train with my buddies out there. Not that I don't like being with my family and everything else. It's just that I had such a good time walking into a gym twice a day.
That's what you always hear, whether it's a team sport. It's always the clubhouse moments, the locker room moments, or in fighting's case, the gym moments that the guys really wind up missing.
Yeah, and it's the way it is, just the way it is. I don't need to compete anymore, but man, my good times with my buddies are just priceless to me.
When you're talking to your children about what you did, is there a difficulty in explaining what you did and why you did it, and you know, the sport being as brutal as it was?
I tailor it all towards competition. Mm-hmm. Daddy's just a competitor, you know, and I'm not meaning to hurt somebody, but you know, I've got to get my hand raised. I've got to win. If I win, I'm probably going to make more money for the family. So I try and tailor it that way, and I'm very lucky right now. My 13-year-old boy doesn't have really an aggressive bone in his body, so I'm just real lucky right now. Now my girls, 6 and 3, the good thing is they're girls, and the bad thing is they're girls. You parents out there,
send that to Matt Hughes.
You parents out there who have boys my girl's age, watch out, because I'll be cleaning the gun when the first one comes knocking at my door.
Yeah, that's a terrifying proposition.
Yeah.
Hey, but I'm just curious, what do you think of the, I guess the UFC now has an official women's division. Is that something that has sustainability to it?
Yes, it does. It attracts a lot of eyeballs. I'm not a fan. I don't like to see a woman get hit, even if it is by another woman. But, boy, it sells tickets.
Right.
They've got more PR from Ronda Rousey than any other fighter. Any other fighter. So it's been real good for the UFC.
Let's talk a little bit about your brother. We've laughed about you guys growing up and rough and tumble and competition between the two of you. And getting back to when you started, Matt, and we used to go up to Springfield and watch you, and Mark was doing bouts then. Has he ever expressed any regrets that maybe he should have continued or what? Or did he just say, hey, this is not my bag and I'm done with it and blah?
No, I think he did decide that it's not. He didn't want to do it. It's not that it wasn't his thing. He just would came back to the farm and was going to do other things. I think it came to a point where Mark needed to really train full time and start really learning some stuff. His natural talent came to a point where it was he needed to supplement that, and he just didn't want to move away. He didn't want to leave the area. So just gave it up. Yeah. But a lot of people don't know that Mark's undefeated in the UFC.
Oh, yeah.
1-0.
There you go. Get out on the high note. How much did having a twin brother play, do you think, in that competitive drive? I mean, having a brother within a certain age, there's going to be competition. But a twin brother, I can't even imagine.
I wouldn't be sitting here right now if I didn't have a twin brother. If I wasn't raised on the farm and have a twin brother, I wouldn't be anywhere near this studio or I wouldn't be retired for sure. Those are huge, really huge. Being competitive with my twin is a sickness. When I explain this, you'll agree with me. Now, we're 39 years old. We both want the faster truck. We want the better looking wife. We want the more disciplined kids. I mean, a sick. We want the four wheeler that'll go through more amount of mud. You know, so it is really that's a sickness. That's like a disease. You know, and every day you try and fight it, but still. Right. Mark and I were going to the fair yesterday, and we hit the Butler Tee. Went north on the Butler Tee, and of course, you know, I program my truck, so my boost is on, and Mark comes out and tries past me. We're both kicking out black smoke in our diesel pickups truck, and it's just the way it is.
It's never going to change.
It's never going to change. My sister-in-law, Emily, was with Mark, and she was like, you know, you guys will be 50 and going to church and still be racing your trucks going to church. And Mark's like, yeah, we will.
And I'd be quick to add, don't ever lose that competitive edge because, you know, with your brother or whoever, that's great. There's nothing greater than competition, clean competition. Yes. You guys do that stuff in fun, you know, but the competitive edge will always be there, and may you never lose that.
We've got a few minutes left here on Sports Saturday with Matt Hughes, and I guess, Matt, this isn't so much of a question as just kind of a statement. It's so neat to me that you never left Hillsborough. You know, it's not like you were here and then went away when you were a big star and then came back. I mean, people would see you. I would see you walking around Hillsborough when you were the ultimate fighting champion of the world, and I guess to me, it's just so cool now that you're retired, you're here, and like you see you around town. It's not like you get bum rushed with people all the time. And I think it's because you were always here. You never changed. You never went anywhere. And I just think that's a really neat kind of thing about it. It sums you up. It describes you well, I think.
Well, I'm very comfortable in my hometown, as I should be. But I don't get – nobody walks across the road if I'm walking down Main Street and says, hey, can I get an autograph?
Right.
It just doesn't happen. And that's great. That's the way I want it. Now, I've always been the type of guy to where if somebody comes up to me and says, like last night at the fair, I had several people, kids come up wanting autographs, and they saw a fight of mine or their parents saw a fight of mine. They either paid for a pay-per-view or they paid for a live ticket, but they paid some money to watch me fight. And the trickle-down effect tells me that money wrote my paycheck.
Right.
So I'm very thankful for those people that paid some way or another to watch me fight and wrote my paychecks. So I always try and take care of the fans, but I love my hometown. Yeah. I'm just the kid that grew up on the west side of town on a farm with my twin brother, you know, and I love it. I'll travel away to do some traveling, but I'll always come back, you know.
And you're retired before the age of 40. That is like the American dream.
Well,
he retired from fighting.
Yeah, I got a wife, I got a kid, obligations, you know, with the UFC.
Sure.
So I'm not retired. It's a soft retirement.
That's a good way to put it. Soft retirement.
A redirection. That's what it is.
And one thing about it, Matt, if I see you on the street and I talk to you, when we walk away from each other, still to this day, after all you have done and all you've been through, still to this day, my wife will say, "Was that matter, Mark?"
I get that. And you know what? But I really believe if Mark would cut his hair a little bit and we had the same clothes, I could walk out and Mark would walk in here and it'd take you two or three looks at him. Yeah. We just look alike.
I believe
you do.
We look alike.
Yeah. You do.
Like twins almost. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. And we're fraternal twins, but we still look so much alike.
For a long time, the Fuller boys were that way, Rex and Drex. I couldn't tell them apart and I worked with them.
Matt, we really appreciate
you
coming in our studio today.
And Earl, you
today.
Too.
Yeah. And Earl don't have a twin.
No.
Thank goodness.
Hurdle doesn't have a twin, does he?
No.
Okay, good.
That mold was broken.
Jake took that mold out and beat it with a hammer when Hurdle was born.
I was really wanting twins. I'm a twin, and my wife, Jim Moore, is a twin. My wife's father is a twin. I thought, well, there's a good chance we're going to drum a twin up out of here. Mm-hmm. Knock two kids out at one time.
Right, might as well, right?
Didn't happen.
Oh.
And one of them, though, one of your children, it may happen.
It will happen.
Somewhere along the line.
It'll skip a generation. You will, one day we'll have... Twin grandchildren.
Absolutely. That's even better than having my own kids.
There you go.
Twin grandkids.
Matt, we appreciate it so much for coming in.
You guys
have
a good day.
Thank you so much.
You listeners have a good day out there, too. It's nice.
True champion in every respect, Matt Hughes. Earl Meyer, thanks so much, and good luck in the Bud Reinke Golf Tournament next week. Don't forget, we will have Sports Saturday next week coming up on WSMI FM 106. And next week, I think we've got a special broadcast from the Hillsborough Area Hospital after the sports show. So we're... looking forward to that. That's all coming up on WSMI FM, Litchfield, Hillsboro, Carlinville, and Greenville, your 50,000-watt sports voice of Mid-Illinois and America's high school sports leader. Stick around. We've got NBC News coming up next.